One thing I've heard about that's getting a little bit recommended more for depression and anxiety is actually exercise. Have you been prescribing exercise? That's, I know you're somebody who's avid in exercise, you know, avid exercise user, or you know, somebody loves it themselves. Have you been, is that part of the kind of, I guess, prescription you would give to a client of yours?
Absolutely. Every single one of my clients, I actually encourage to exercise in some way. The types of exercise are dependent on their personality. So in terms of psychology, if we boil it down to some basics, people either need tightening or loosening.
You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch.
Thanks for stopping by and checking out another Thursday edition of the Addicted to Fitness podcast. Super excited for today's episode because I get to introduce you all to another professional from the field of health and wellness. My guest today is a clinical psychologist, a relationship counselor, and an avid yoga practitioner. It's my distinct pleasure to welcome Dr. Nydia Conrad to the Addicted to Fitness podcast. Thanks for joining me today, Nydia.
Thank you for having me.
I know we kind of, I think, met through social media, really. We have a mutual friend, Anthony Policemini.
Yes.
Who is one of my clients, but also a friend of yours. Mm-hmm. But also, you were showing ETT and the podcast a lot of love on Twitter.
Yes.
Which I always appreciate. And then I started following you and seeing all the motivational kind of tweets and material you put out. So mm-hmm. I was like, this is somebody that kind of seems simpatico with the type of beliefs that I have. So mm-hmm. I figured it'd be, and Anthony always sings your praises, so I wanted to make sure I got you on the podcast. So being a clinical psychologist, I would love to hear how you started developing, what made you develop a passion for that area, for that expertise?
Well, initially, I went to college and I studied veterinary medicine. I was in a pre-vet program. At the same time, I actually started volunteering for a suicide intervention program on the college campuses. And what I found was that I was gravitating more towards that, towards helping people, towards getting an understanding of what I could do to really make an impact on people's lives, and definitely less interested in the coursework that I was taking. So, for example, I was taking a class called Invertebrate Technology, and I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, you know, helping people, making a difference in their lives, or studying the cockroach. And so at that point, I decided that what felt more related to my purpose in life was really getting out there and helping people. So I dropped that class and I became a psych major. And from there, I just continued on with my education because I just felt very passionate about it. I felt like this was exactly what I was meant to do.
Well, that's super interesting to say, because I know we were talking before we started recording about this. It was your second career, you know, psychology is your second career, and you know, personal training and fitness kind of my second career. And also studied a lot of invertebrate zoology and things like that. So very weird kind of common, I guess,
interest.
Yeah, that we had. I actually went all the way through with it.
And oh, finished it.
Yes, I got my degree in environmental science and then master's degree in another, you know, environmental science field. So, but now, you know, like I said, no, we're both going after our passions now, which you kind of, yes, we were talking about earlier about how important that is. And in your, you know, in your practice, how many people do you find that are actually really pursuing their passion? Is it a high number, a high percentage?
No. No. What I find for the most part, and it actually leads to a lot of unhappiness, is that people, for the most part, just kind of follow whatever path it is that they think is the easiest in some sense. So if they have an idea, I want to do this, they'll actually follow it, even if it makes them miserable. So oftentimes you'll see somebody and they'll say, you know, that they wanted to pursue one career, but instead their parents pushed them towards something else, or maybe somebody told them they wouldn't make it. And what you find is then they have this continued doubt in their minds. They tend to then internalize that, not just in terms of their field, but in terms of their lives in general. Because essentially the message is, I want to, but I can't. And that creates problems, because at that point then the things that bring you passion, the things that light that fire, are not the things that people pursue. So oftentimes they will come into my office and they realize that they're unhappy. And once I start trying to get a feel for what it is that's going on, I tend to find that at some level of realizing that you're not doing what you're meant to be doing, or you're not doing what your heart says is is going to do it for you, is going to make you happy. Instead, you do what you think you should do. And that creates a lot of problems again, because then you tend to see that, whether it be in their choice of career, in their choice of where they decide to live, in their pastimes. I mean, there's so many people that have so many dreams that are just unfulfilled, and it's only because they don't believe that they can do it. So a lot of people that I see are almost afraid to follow their dreams, and mainly because they're afraid of failure, which is another issue altogether, you know? Because essentially, what happens if you fail? Well, you get up, you dust off, and you try again. I mean, nobody is born super strong or super successful or super smart, even. I mean, sure, some people are. But what happens? I mean, how do you get to where you want to get in life? You work hard, you put yourself in situations where you can be successful, and you just make it happen.
Right.
But you have to believe it.
Yeah.
If you don't believe it, then you end up, again, following kind of this path, the path of least resistance, the path of not necessarily unhappiness, but certainly not anything that is going to light you up, that's going to motivate you, that's going to make you want to go out there and get the world.
Now, we're now obviously helping people discover that is probably the first, I mean, I don't want to assume anything, but that probably is one of the first steps. And then after that, what type of treatments, per se, would you give somebody to pursue that or to kind of build upon that?
That's where the fun starts. Because once somebody realizes it, it's essentially when you realize that the only real issue, the only real thing that's in your way is you, then we work on getting you out of your way. And essentially, some of that comes with understanding what are the things that you've been telling yourself all these years that have taught you that you can only achieve what you're achieving now. So a lot of times, that's where you go into family origin issues. You know, people often have learned from someone else that they're not good enough. Now, you can only use that in terms of blaming your history for that for so long, because at some point you have to understand that you've indoctrinated that message into your story. So part of what I look at with people is, where did you learn that you couldn't do this? Now, once you learn that, then we say, okay, so let's unlearn this. Let's test some things out. Let's see what happens. And you also kind of move into this plan of action with people. You get them to start taking some steps and saying, you know, okay, can you do this? Can you do that? And at the same time, kind of monitoring, what are they telling themselves? Because that old message of, I am not good enough, is always going to sit with them until they challenge it enough and prove to themselves that I can. Because the truth is, and I do believe this, you can do anything. You just have to be willing to put out that hard work, really bust your ass, and make it happen. So the treatment is, you change those thinking. You change those thoughts immediately. You teach them that's what you learned. You also teach them that's what you're keeping in your life. Because once you realize that you are keeping that message alive, then you realize you can put it to bed. So what do? Do things that light that fire. Take some steps, take some risks, move out there. Certainly if there's an underlying depression, you have to treat that as well. And usually there's anxiety associated with that. But the key is to take away the power of the negative messages and really give the power back to the individual. And that's where you see the magic happen.
Now, there's something you mentioned in there, like obviously if there's depression and anxiety, what I've been hearing a lot, and just a little bit of switch gears, we're going to keep building on all the stuff you talked about. One thing I've heard about that's getting a little bit recommended more for depression and anxiety is actually exercise. Have you been prescribing exercise? That's, I know you're somebody who's avid in exercise, you know, avid exercise user, or, you know, somebody loves it themselves. Have you been, is that part of the kind of, I guess, prescription you would give to a client of yours?
Absolutely. Every single one of my clients, I actually encourage to exercise in some way. The types of exercise are dependent on their personality. So in terms of psychology, if we boil it down to some basics, people either need tightening or loosening, right? So someone who needs tightening needs to learn to kind of rein it in a little bit. So those are the people that I tend to prescribe yoga to. Things so you can learn to calm the brain down, calm yourself down so you can think about what you're doing and then relax and then make some decisions from that point. The people that need loosening tend to be the people that tend to be a little bit more anxious, and I will actually refer them to more activities that are like actually sort of what you do.
Right.
you know, whether it be kickboxing, boxing, anything active, you know, I will get them to kind of step outside of that comfort zone and realize, okay, so what happens if I go to this? And the greatest thing is most people realize that even if something doesn't go as planned, there's no pterodactyl that's going to come down and eat them because things didn't go their way, because they got punched in the face, or because they fell doing a yoga pose. What happens? What's the major consequence? And I ask them this. And usually the consequence is, well, you know, I fell down, felt a little bit of discomfort. And then my follow-up question to that is, and can you deal with discomfort? And the answer is always yes. So definitely exercise is a big deal, because I do think some people are resistant to it, especially if you get in that pattern of kind of sitting around, eating things you shouldn't be eating. It's very easy to stay in that pattern. So what I try to explain to people is, you have some goals, right? Everything that you do in this life is either going to take you towards those goals or pull you away. Let's look at, if your goal is to be happy or whatever, how does sitting on the couch all day take you towards that goal?
Doesn't take you towards it.
No, and then what you realize is you're now then, again, putting the power in their hands. And then they realize, okay, so exercise benefits in that way. And also, of course, there's endorphins and all kinds of epinephrine and things that get released in terms of being able to combat depression, combat anxiety. It's very relaxing. People feel empowered. I find that it helps people even feel in control of their environment, because now they have something that they feel like once they get the hang of it, they're good at. Yoga especially, even people who run or do any other kind of training, it's like once they get the hang of it, you really start to see the self-esteem improve, and you start to see, again, what I call the magic happen. You see them start to make some beautiful changes in their lives.
Yeah, and obviously, as somebody whose life changed literally because of the exercise, I can attest to that. I mean, it was all flipped around. I write about it all the time, that I was going down a bad physical and mental path, mm-hmm. and then it just switched around when I decided, I guess, what'd you say, I need loosening? If I'm boxing and kickboxing, that means I probably need loosening.
Yes.
So once I discovered my loosening practice, I was able to switch it all around, and that's kind of, it really just led to everything that I'm doing now. So, and I always promote that with everyone, just because, like you said, not everybody's going to like boxing or kickboxing. Not everybody's going to like yoga. You got to find the discipline that you enjoy that benefits you the most.
Exactly.
And that's both physically and mentally too.
Yes.
Because there's an aspects about, you know, the boxing and kickboxing that benefits me mentally that it's not going to benefit others the same way.
Exactly.
So it's like, what people ask, what's the best form of exercise? Well, it's like, what is your personal
exactly.
goal?
Exactly. Tell me what you're like.
Exactly. To stay on the topic of goal setting, is that something, I'm assuming that's something you probably do that's big with your clients, because after you discovered what may be kind of helping them realize that they can achieve their goals, setting realistic goals so they accomplish those, I imagine it's maybe another step.
Definitely. It's definitely a huge, huge part of it, because oftentimes what tends to paralyze people is they might say, you know what, I want to become a black belt. And so they have this lofty goal, which is possible, but they can actually get lost in the process. Because again, if you don't have your goal and you don't have it consistent in your mind, then you might kind of just have it as almost this dream. So with my clients, I work on, okay, this week, what step are we going to take towards that? Okay, I might want to go take a class. You know, I want to know if I like it. And then certainly every week and every session, you are working exactly on those goals. So you have the main goal, which is black belt, and then you have those sub-goals. Well, what do I need to do? Maybe I need to find a class. Maybe I need to strengthen myself. Like all these things. And essentially what I tell them is you always keep that goal in mind, but always be taking steps towards it. Because you can think that and enjoy it and then not really be doing it. You know, you could spend your week, you know, doing groceries and all this and watching television and still think, I want to be a black belt, but not necessarily taking any of those steps to get there. And that can be with education as well. Some people say, you know, I want to become a psychologist. Well, get in college and look at your grades.
Yep.
Because, you know, essentially, again, everything has requirements. If you want to be a psychologist, you better get all A's. And, of course, that is you know, you can accomplish that, but what does that mean? So we go to sub-goals. You need to study every night. You need to do your work. So essentially, getting back to the goals, there's always, like, the main goal, and then every week is a step towards it. And then we'll analyze if there's back steps, which there can be. I mean, you know, I'm working with people who are really good at sabotaging themselves sometimes. then we just analyze it and say, okay, where's this coming from? And that's where the psychological piece really comes in and saying, okay, is this you or is this something you heard?
Right.
Is this because you can't do it or is it because you've had failures in the past that you have internalized and decided that this is now part of your story, I'm a failure? Once we hit that, then we work on trying to remove that from the past and say, okay, let's ignore that then. Let's say you're not a failure. Look at all the evidence that you're not and get back off your ass. Because that's what we do. You know, as a psychologist, my job essentially is, I see where you're going. This is not taking you to where you want to go. Get up.
Yeah.
And I do it gently and in psychotherapeutic ways, you know, but that's the goal. You see that they want to get somewhere and you got to get people out of their way.
Right.
So sometimes it's very sweet and sometimes it is, you know, stand up, get up, dust off, let's do this.
Yeah, and it seems that probably a large part of what you do is convincing people that there's no immediate gratifications. Obviously, to a certain extent, you got your small achievements and you should, you know, kind of embrace those because those give you the little kind of buoy you need
exactly.
to the next one. But to think that, like being a black belt, you know, especially in some disciplines like jiu-jitsu, I mean, it could take decades.
Sure, they're not going to give that to you
exactly.
just because you come to class.
Exactly. So it's like having that and then, but always know that you're working towards that and mm-hmm. having that mindset that it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Exactly.
Is something I'm sure is probably hard for a lot of people to understand.
Yes, yes. People want things now, which is why they tend to gravitate towards other behaviors. So, for example, somebody who wants to, you know, relieve their depression now, instead of kind of doing a lot of the hard work, a lot of the challenging, a lot of shaping your life, taking some of the negative people and events out, all this is hard work, they might say, you know what, I think I'm going to have a brownie. Because essentially, you get all those sugars in there and you start to feel better, but what happens afterwards?
Right. Yeah, you get the crash, yep.
And then the depressive symptoms come back and, you know, so you have that and you definitely battle with that in psychotherapy because even people who want to exercise, want to run marathons, they will start and then sometimes once it gets hard, there's a failure that comes in. And that's what you battle quite a bit and you have to explain, you know what, so you didn't run it this week. Let's figure out what went wrong and let's move.
Right.
Now, the benefit of my field is that people are coming in because they want to get past those barriers. So, you know, I might actually go run with them. I might say, okay, you don't think you can run 2 miles? Next session, we're going to go run.
Right.
And that's what we've done.
Right.
And then I show them, you know, if I can get out there and decide I'm going to go do it, and you can do it too, what's stopping us now?
Right.
You know, so sometimes you got to remove people from their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to teach them. Again, it's not going to happen overnight. You're not going to feel better overnight.
Right.
In therapy, you feel worse usually because what I'm doing is pulling out all your dirty, you know, garbage and things that you've learned that are horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then you rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And the rebuilding part is great, but when I pull out all this stuff, you know, people often have trouble dealing with it
right.
and separating it from themselves.
Now, we're talking about mainly right now, we've been talking about the individual, kind
okay.
of like on an individual basis. Now, mm-hmm. I also know you deal with, you know, couples and married, you know, married people mm-hmm. and then other people that are significant others and whatnot. What do you find with them is kind of, as far as having a meaningful relationship,
mm-hmm.
what is some of the barriers to those? Because to me, just kind of preface this to relate it back to health and wellness is that I think meaningful relationships are kind of the cornerstone to being a healthy life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a meaningful relationship, it doesn't have to be with an intimate one, but just having mm-hmm. meaningful relationship with people you interact with on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
that provides me with joy. So I
yes.
imagine I can't be the only one, obviously.
No.
So what do you think's the kind of stopping people? I mean, it might be the same thing. Is that what, the same thing we talked about? Are they stopping people from having meaningful relationships or kind of past, you know, I guess, incidences or things like that?
Definitely some of that. A lot of what we learn about relationships in general comes from your family of origin. So what we learn about love early on is based on what we see our parents do. So one of the questions I'll ask if I have couples and is, you know, how did you know your father loved your mother? And oftentimes when you see problems in relationships, especially related to affection, they might say, well, he came home every night. And okay, well, how did he show her? You know, because then you'll have somebody who, let's say, their wife or their husband is saying they don't show affection, and surprise, their parents didn't either. And so what I love to do with them is try to figure out what they've learned about relationships and then bring them back to, okay, now, is that the relationship that you want? And again, it goes back to goals, not the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So then we say, well, what do you want? And then what I start to look at is some of the common problems that you see in couples. So, for example, what happens with relationships in general is that there is a natural tendency to drift. People get very lazy. And if you think about it with exercise, you know, what happens if you just decide you're going to lift this weight and that's just going to be the weight that you lift and this is going to be the miles that you run? I mean, are you really going to make any huge gains? If you don't change things up, if you don't push yourself. So what happens with couples is they'll push themselves in the beginning. There's that whole romance and you find yourself doing sweet things and saying all these nice things to each other. That's what keeps a relationship alive. What happens is people slowly start to pull away from that. They start to drift. They get into almost this autopilot relationship, autopilot life, essentially, where they're not actively pursuing something to make themselves happy, to make the partnership happy. People stop going on dates. The intimacy definitely takes a dump.
Yeah.
And what you do to fix that is essentially, one, watch how they're talking to each other. Because oftentimes people that are distant are not nurturing the relationship. They're not talking to each other about each other's days. They're certainly not talking about things that you talk about when you start a relationship. I mean, what do you do when you get to know someone? You want to know their hopes. You want to know their dreams. You want to know what they're afraid of. That's the kind of curiosity that makes somebody really feel attended to. So in the relationships, what happens is the longer you're with somebody, the more likely you are to become a little bit more lazy. And then you start to see, again, the only things that they do talk about are problems. You know, you come home and it's like, yes, you know, the dog pooped on the floor and, you know, can you help me with the dishes and all this? And none of that has anything to do with who you are as a man and who she is as a woman. It's now about stuff. So communication becomes less individualized and more about just kind of day-to-day nonsense, which is not what helps. And then that puts you at risk because then you start to see basically what Gottman calls the horsemen of the apocalypse, but those are the things that damage relationships. You start then to see contempt, start to see resentment, and those are actually predictors of divorce. Because at that point, if somebody is now holding a grudge, if they're stonewalling, which means that's when somebody now refuses to speak to you about things.
Right.
When you're seeing those huge lapses in communication, that becomes a pattern, and then you're headed for divorce. Mm. So what helps couples is, and what I tell them to do, is even if you only have 20 minutes in a day, sit outside with each other, not to complain about the day, but to kind of get back into those conversations. You know, what do you think about? Is this where you want to be in your life? What? How do you feel about the path we're taking? You know, these kinds of questions are the ones that will bring you back together.
Right.
And I find that that actually helps most couples, even if it's 20 minutes. The other piece is making sure they're listening to each other. So I'll ask somebody, you know, listen to your husband for 10 minutes and then tell him what you heard. And because that's helpful, because at that point, now this is couples therapy stuff.
Right.
At that point, then you get to hear, you know, and understand, does she hear me? And if you feel heard, if you feel seen, you're definitely going to start to boost in that attraction that's there, that intimacy comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, it's another beautiful opportunity to say, okay, so somehow my message got lost. This is where I'm going with it. And again, the more understanding there is there, the more clarity there is there in terms of the communication, then you've got the couple back.
Right.
Then they're doing things for each other. They're listening to each other. I definitely think date nights are huge.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that shows, and also with sex life, I do sex therapy as well. A lot of times what you find is people kind of get boring and they get bored and it has to do with being busy and having kids and all this other stuff. And so what I tell people, because they will come into my office with that specifically, is, you know, learn to have fun. And I'll show them all kinds of books. And basically, with a couple, you just have to keep trying.
Right.
Whether it be sexually, intellectually, personally, the minute you stop trying, it's like watering a plant. What happens when you stop watering it?
It dies.
Yeah, so the relationship will always need water and hard work.
That's, you know, that's great advice, because you hear the statistics kind of thrown out about, you know, 50%. And I don't know if it's still that high or if that's just a number it gets thrown around, but 50% of marriages end in divorce nowadays. But you can see, and, you know, obviously, luckily, my wife, the co-host of the podcast, and I, we get to sit down on, you know, bi-weekly basis and discuss interesting topics that interest both of us.
Yes.
So that's kind of a benefit of the podcast, but like also doing it outside of that too, you know, as far as, you know, it's not, this is definitely, we enjoy doing this, but you know, it's also, it's something we want to share with others. Having stuff that you don't share with others is an important part of
that. Something special, whether it be little trips or something that you know you'd enjoy, or even something different would be cool.
And doing it to try to apply it to, because not everybody's going to be in a married relationship or have a significant other, someone they're intimate with. How could you apply that, or how would you recommend somebody apply it to finding a family outside of their biological family? Because one thing I found when I joined the gym, my kickboxing gym, was that they became my family.
Yes.
I moved to Colorado by myself. I found a gym out there, and they became my family there. And that support system, that family structure, is what allowed me to maintain my motivation, my drive, and everything of that nature. And I feel that's a huge part of why a lot of people may not have those things that we talked about earlier, or setting goals for themselves and inspiring to be better. Now, do you find people are having trouble discovering a family system when they're maybe, you know, somewhat out on their own, or go out to venture out on their own?
Yes. What you did was extremely resilient, because what you did was you found a family that was supportive and that was able to meet your needs. A lot of times what people do, and it's this kind of ventures into what's called interpersonal psychology, which is essentially the problems that we had we'll find in other people. So people might be looking for a family, might be looking for friendships, but if they're not watching what they're doing, they will find the same people that make them feel the same ways. They're just not related to them. So, for example, if somebody had like a mean mom, they might find a mean wife, or they might find a mean friend or somebody. So it becomes an issue of resilience, which means that at some point you told yourself, I can, I'm doing this. And you went out there. Oftentimes people who still have a lot of self-doubt will actually find people to recreate the same family system again and again and again. But I will say that what you're saying is also very encouraging, because there are people that say, you know what, this wasn't great. So even if your childhood was great, you know, but let's say it wasn't, they still say, but I still want a family. I still want to do it. I still believe that there are things out there that I just didn't get growing up, so that's it. And I think that when you find those things and you find it in a healthy way, then you really start to see people improve, because then you have the family that essentially can reinforce that part of you that can believe in yourself, or even convince you of it. Because sometimes people don't think they can, and then you find somebody who's like a dad figure or like a mom figure that looks at you and says, you know what, I'm going to show you what I see in you. And they take you down that path, and they show you what you're made of. So I do think, yeah, so not even necessarily in terms of parents, you know, it can be family of friends. It can be just people that you decide to pull in your life because they make you, they bring out parts of you that you like. So definitely that's a big influence in terms of wellness, in terms of happiness for people, yes.
Right, and then I think I'm going to, just wanted to say, because I know my mom listens to podcasts, is that I think the reason I went to those family structures, because I had a very good family structure. So I learned that's what I needed, that's what I craved. So I always looked at for that wherever I went.
You knew what to look for.
Yes, exactly. So just mom, I know she's listening, so I just want to make sure.
Mom did a good job.
Yeah, mom and dad. So everybody did great. My whole
family. Can see that, yes. That makes sense in terms of why you picked them, because you knew what felt right.
Right. Exactly.
Yes, and some people, they know what feels wrong and they follow that. Some people know what feels wrong and they counter that. But you just went right for what works.
Right, exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that obviously it makes complete sense, and I'm very fortunate for having that upbringing and then pursuing it even when I'm an adult, you know.
Exactly.
One thing, and I haven't even looked at the questions I was going to ask you down here, but that's fine. We have a great conversation. One thing I did want to ask you about was, what do you think, I saw online you've been practicing for 10 years now.
Yes.
Have you seen in the last decade a change in people's kind of awareness, their mindset and mentality can have on the rest of the aspects of their lives, opposed to when you first started?
Definitely, yes. Initially, what I noticed was that, and the stigma still kind of exists in terms of mental health, but people often would think that going to a psychologist meant you have to have a mental diagnosis, a mental issue. 10 years ago, definitely, and people would be kind of concerned, and you know, a little bit more nervous about going to see a psychologist because they thought it meant there's something wrong with you. For the most part, I can tell you my clients themselves these days are CEOs. They're people who are extremely successful. Most of them do not have a diagnosable mental illness. The people that come in now are just people that realize that there are parts of their lives that there's something seems to be missing. So you'll have somebody who's successful, who's married or not married and just happy that way. Mm-hmm. They might be have all these things in their lives and they still feel like there's just that one piece that's missing. And it can be purpose. It can be whether or not they actually have really followed their dreams. It could just be self-doubt. But what I notice is the people that are coming in now tend to be people who are very successful, don't have any mental illness, but really just want to better their lives. And I think that's showing that in the past 10 years, people are focusing more towards bettering their lives, more towards getting out there and being happy, versus the people that I used to see about 10 years ago would just be people who had diagnosable mental conditions who really needed help, which would help as well. But what I'm seeing is more people tend to be just open to it. They come in. There doesn't seem to be any shame with it. They tell all their buddies about me. And so, you know, which helps because it actually then spreads the word that this isn't just for someone who's, you know, having psychosis. This can just be for somebody who says, you know what? I'm missing something. I want to find it because I deserve it. Mm-hmm. That tends to be more of the attitude that I'm seeing.
Well, that's in the little... I haven't the chance to speak with somebody like you except for right now. But... What I discovered, and kind of I discovered it, me and my wife and I were getting married. We got married in the Catholic Church, and we had to do like a marriage counseling kind of class per se. And I, kind of dreaded it, but we were like, what are they going to teach us, you know? And anything we thought it was going to be very kind of, you know, religious based, and yeah. But it was actually the exact opposite. It was very kind of modernized, very like a lot of the things you talk about communication and the intimacy and being able to listen, be a great listener and things like that. So I can see the benefits in being able to freely speak to somebody, a professional like yourself, and allowing them to give you feedback on the possible areas you can improve.
Mm-hmm.
So, because, I mean, you don't have to... I think there's always room for improvements for everyone. I think everybody should realize that.
Definitely.
You know, so it's like for someone like you is being available, someone like yourself who's being available to everyone from any demographic, social class or whatever it may be can improve their health and wellness.
Exactly.
Now, is there, we're getting down towards the end of the interview today, but I do want to ask you about do you use meditation in your treatments? Because we've been talking a lot about meditation lately. Mm-hmm. Both my wife and I use the Headspace app, which is, you know, kind of guided meditations via app. Is that something that you recommend or something you use in treatments?
I definitely do. I recommend meditations, again, for most of my clients, whether they need tightening or loosening, because what that promotes is, one, you're calming yourself down, but then also self-awareness. I've had clients, you know, who have difficulty meditating that I'll actually do a meditation class with them. I'll sit down, we'll turn down the lights, and I'll teach them how to turn off that mind and how to focus. Because what I find is that's one that everybody could benefit from. Because once you can really get grounded like that, once you can take control in terms of your mind, in terms of your feelings, then you're more likely to make better decisions and you're more likely to react less from emotion and more from a place of goals, a place of just kind of sound mind.
Right.
So I definitely, I mean, I meditate daily. I recommend that my clients meditate daily. I've gone to the beach and meditated with them because I told you when I have somebody that's a little resistant, then I'll go with them. Because then again, now we can go sit at the beach and see that even if somebody gives you a funny look on the beach because you're meditating, that there still will be no dinosaur that comes out to eat you. What happens? They give you a funny look and you keep going.
Yeah.
So what?
Right.
But yes, definitely, I recommend it for everyone.
Well, that's good. And I know that's something, it's definitely not simple. I don't want to put it in that app, but that's something people can do, you know, on their own.
With an app?
Yes, exactly. That's why I always like finding those. One of our mutual people we both enjoy, Tim Ferriss, he always has life hacks that he likes to do, and he always shares with them. And I think meditation, especially with now with modern technology, is something you can do to help improve your health and wellness. So, thank you so much. Dr. Conrad for speaking with me today. Kind of the last question, I'm kind of posing this to all my interviewees, is if you had one piece of kind of health and related advice you want to give the listeners, what would it be?
Get out of your head and learn to live. The problems that people have for the most part come from what they think, things again that they've internalized from the environment and not necessarily from a lot that's based in current reality. Sometimes you have to push past your fears. Sometimes you have to be uncomfortable. But essentially, once you do all those things, you really can just reap the benefits and go live your life.
Well, that's great. Now, how can people get a hold of you? I know you're local, but actually you live here in the Tampa Bay area, but I saw online people can maybe connect with you remotely for sessions.
Yes, we can do Skype sessions. Certainly people can do that. They can probably, the easiest way to do it is just email me or through Twitter on Dr. Nadia Conrad. I think it's at gmail.com is my latest email.
Okay. That's all right. Well, I'll get all your contact afterwards, and I'll share it. I'll share it on our show notes so everybody can, who's interested in speaking with you, can do so. So
yes, definitely.
And hopefully, I know, next time on your next pursuit, whether it be, maybe you want to do a marathon together or whatever, whatever we're going to do, hopefully you'll come back on and speak with us then.
Oh, definitely. I'm in.
All right. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Conrad.
Thank you for having me.
If you want to learn more about Elemental Training Tampa, check us out on Facebook or go to our website, elementaltampa.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle ETTampa. Please rate and review the podcast. Your feedback will help us get better. Thanks.